Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. At this time, we would like to welcome everyone to Raia Drogasil conference call to discuss its 2015 results. The audio for this conference is being broadcast simultaneously through the internet in the website www.raiadrogasil.com.br/ir. In that address, you can also find the slideshow presentation available for download. We inform that all participants will only be able to listen to the conference during the company's presentation. After the company's remarks are over, there will be a Q&A period. At that time, further instructions will be given. Should any participant need assistance during this conference, please press star zero for an operator. Before proceeding, let me mention the forward-looking statements are being made under the safe harbor of the Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1996. Forward-looking statements are based on the beliefs and assumptions of Raia Drogasil management and on information currently available to the company. Forward-looking statements are not guarantees of performance. They involve risks, uncertainties, and assumptions because they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur in the future. Investors should understand that general economic conditions, industry conditions, and other operating factors could also affect the future results of Raia Drogasil and could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in such forward-looking statements. Today with us are Mr. Marcílio Pousada, CEO, Mr. Eugênio de Zagottis, Investor Relations and Corporate Planning Vice President, and Gabriel Rosenberg, IR and Corporate Planning Director. Now, I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Marcílio Pousada. Sir, you may begin your conference.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the fourth quarter conference call of Raia Drogasil. Eugênio will detail our results, and before the Q&A, I will stress some items that's important for 2015 and our goal for 2016. Eugênio, please.
Well, hello, everyone. First of all, thanks for attending our conference call, and we're very proud to present record results for 2015. In spite of the very challenging economic environment in Brazil that you are all aware about. I think these numbers, they underscore a couple of things. I think the defensive nature of our market, which is driven by the age of the population, the fact that we have a very strong balance sheet and positive free cash flow generation, this makes a huge difference in a market like this. Finally, the standard of execution that we have constituted over the last 2 years, materializing the vision that made Raia and Drogasil to merge as one. In this quarter, we are combining the numbers of 4Bio. Consolidation means that only the fourth quarter is added. Combination means pro forma, bringing 4Bio, considering that 4Bio has always been part of Raia Drogasil. These are combined numbers. We ended the period with 1,235 stores in operation. We opened 156 and closed 15 last year. We reached 9.4 billion in revenues, 21.1% growth. Looking only at retail, we did 2.5% same-store sales growth. Our gross margin reached 29%, 1.2 percentage point expansion. Our EBITDA totaled 743.5 million, a margin of 7.9% and a 0.9% margin expansion. Here it's important to consider that if we were talking only about Raia Drogasil, it's an 8% EBITDA margin. 4Bio has lower margins, so the number falls down from 8% to 7.9%. The adjusted net income totaled 391 million, 4.2% margin and 44% increase. Finally, we recorded positive free cash flow for the third consecutive year, 110 million this year. We recorded a total cash consumption of 20 million, especially because we tripled our interest on capital distribution. On the next page, we have all the details concerning the combination of Raia Drogasil and 4Bio. I have no intention to talk about the numbers here. We are providing these numbers for you so that you can reconcile what Raia Drogasil did with what you had in your models, and so that you can start building consolidating models from now on, and now you have the historic data to back it up. On page 5, we see here, when you put it together with our story, that this was another strong year of accelerated growth with margin expansion and value creation. If you consider the company in 2007, this is our initial year as a public company, when Drogasil did its IPO. From 2007 to 2015, we multiplied our revenues 3 times. We multiplied our store count 3 times. We multiplied our revenues 5 times. And we multiplied our EBITDA 9.5 times. So my point here is, this value creation was done with tremendous quality growth under your very eyes, as a public company almost entirely. So we know it's cliche to say that the best is ahead, but the reality is that we have 15 years of growth, considering that the age of the population is at an inflection point right now, considering also that we have only 10% of market share in such a high growth market. So we believe that this is the growth story. If it's not in the beginning, it's maybe in the middle. On the next page, we compare the 2015 to 2011, the numbers before the merger. And since the merger, we increased the store base by 59%. We entered 8 9 states that represented 11% of the Brazilian pharmaceutical market. We increased our gross revenues by 97.4, meaning nearly doubling. Our EBITDA increased 153%. We increased our ROIC by 6.7 percentage points, and as a result, our market cap increased 174% during this period. Now, back to the year, in page 7, we ended with 1,235 stores, including 3 4Bio stores. We opened a total of 156 stores, which was a record last year. We closed 15 stores in the year. This was a higher store closure pace than usual, but I would say this is incidental. There's nothing suggesting that it should repeat itself. We're constantly reassessing, we evaluate our portfolio, we decide where we want to insist, where doesn't make sense insisting, we should just move on, and it so happened that we closed 15 stores in the year. Looking on the right chart here in the page, the new stores, considering non-mature stores, they account for 33.5% of our total store portfolio. This is the youngest store portfolio since the third quarter of 2013. So this is a reflection of the acceleration of our growth pace that is just starting, as we plan to open 195 stores next year. Page 8, this is our current geographic footprint. We have already 63 stores in the Northeast, so this is a very nice highlight for us. We have more than 700 stores in São Paulo, almost 100 in Rio, so it's a pretty good presence already, but we only have 10.6% of national market share. This was the single year of the highest market share expansion that I've seen, which is a reflection of high growth under a very difficult scenario in which many of our competitors are losing ground. São Paulo was a key highlight because of the size of the market, 80 bits. We increased 2.7 percentage points in the Northeast, and we slightly lost share in the Midwest. What happened here is that we haven't opened a single store in Goiânia ever since we did the acquisition of Santa Marta. So we will give the time for Goiânia to absorb our increased density of stores. So but I think there's nothing bad here. Brasília, we opened some stores last year, but only towards the end of the year. So this is not something structural. So going on now, on page 9, talking about revenues, we reached 9.4 billion of combined revenues, 9.2 Raia Drogasil, 186 for Bio. So we increased annual revenues by 21.1% and quarterly revenues by 21%. It's important to mention that the 1.4 billion that we added in revenues this year alone is the exact same size of the fifth largest Brazilian chain. So I can comfortably tell you that we are every year, it's almost like buying the number five player in the market, but just but paying two times EBITDA while doing that. If you repeat this year the kind of growth we had in 2015, you'll be talking 1.9 billion in revenue increase. So the numbers get. This is a very positive thing because of the size of the company. The new revenues we have every year is very material. It gives us tremendous purchasing leverage, tremendous scale benefits as well. A higher Drogazil grew 20.6 in the year, 20.3 in the quarter. Fobio grew 48.1 in the year, 61.3 in the quarter. It's important to mention that since we came in and financially stabilized the company by capitalizing it, by reestablishing supply credits, and by increasing inventories, Fobio accelerated significantly. So we're very happy with Fobio. Our goal is to see Fobio in five, six, 7 years reaching 1 billion in US revenues. In the right here, talking about our retail sales mix. Well, first in the year, HPC increased 20 bps and OTC increased another 20 bps. So 40 bps increase in the front store and then 30 bps decrease in branded and 10 bps in generics. This is a nice mix effect. Obviously, it's not as strong as generics outgrowing the rest, but the branded is the lowest margin we have in the business. We're talking about something like 20% of gross margins. While the front store, we have more than 30% of gross margin. So if you keep sustaining this kind of mix effect, I mean, it makes a difference in our margins in the end of the day. In the quarter specifically, HPC increased 50 bps. Because of the Zika virus outbreak in Brazil, we saw a peak in insecticides, we saw a peak also in insect repellents. But still, even if it took out the peak, HPC would still have been the main growing category in the quarter. I know that this is highly counterintuitive for everybody. We acknowledge that HPC has a higher income exposure than the rest of the mix, but still, given we service the AB class, given our execution, given the format, given the focus on more mass cheese and upscale categories, which customers are less price sensitive, this for us it has been business as usual. On page 10, we talked already about the top line, the combined top line growth, but now digging into specifically Hydro Brasil and the retail part of the execution. We grew same-store sales by 12%, and we grew mature stores by 8.3%. The first point I want to stress is that we're doing really well versus a very strong comp base. So we're looking to an 8.2 comp base last year, and there is also 0.6 percentage point calendar effect that harmed the quarter. So everything else constant, we'll be seeing 8.9 mature stores over 8.2 last year. So it's been a great quarter in terms of revenues. I think we are doing tremendously in our stores. Same store sales, 12%, comping over 13%. Something that is interesting to mention is that as we increase our store base in existing markets, obviously there's a cannibalization involved in that. This doesn't matter as far as the internal rate of return of the new stores, because we already calculate IRR disregarding the cannibalized sales, looking only at marginal sales, but it helps to illustrate how cannibalization affects same-store sales. I mean, an easy comparison to make here is if you compare the total growth in the Q4 to the same-store sales growth if you combine total growth in the 4Q14 with same-store sales growth on the 4Q14, there's a gap of 7.5. In 15, there's a gap of 9 percentage points. Obviously, there's light accelerating growth for buyers to grow a lot, but you can hint here to the fact that there is revenues coming out of mature stores, or same stores actually, and into the total sales growth. But still, we're able to do 8.3 in mature stores, which will be 8.9, disregarding the calendar effect. On page 11, gross margin decreased by 1.2 percentage point in the year and 0.8 in the quarter. So it's a continuation for a margin expansion trend. And we recorded very good cash cycle reduction of 4.9 days, fueled by opportunity purchases that increased inventories, but much more than increased accounts payable. And we're always looking at the net effect between the two. This is what matters cash flow wise. But this was very good for the company. On page 12, talking about expenses, sales expenses increased by 100 basis points from the same quarter last year. 40 bps can be credited to labor. And obviously, I mean, we had a payroll increase of 9.7%, and our price increase was much lower than that. We also believe that the headcount of the stores is slightly ahead of what it should be, so there's even an opportunity to somewhat adjust the number, but not majorly. Electricity, I mean, this is a line we even shouldn't be talking about, because electricity used to represent 0.4% of total revenues, but 0.4 suddenly became 0.7. So 30 bps pressure because of the whole electricity situation you know of. The good news is that going forward, I mean, even if you won't get back to past numbers, but still, this shouldn't pressure us again. We should absorb a similar number to this. And then finally, pre-operation expenses arising from the acceleration of growth represented 0.3 percentage point expense pressure. This is a choice. I mean, we're doing what's best in the long term. And, I mean, if we have to take some pain in the short term to create tremendous value long term, we do that very comfortably. So it's the cost of growth. But the cost of growth pressure is expenses by 30 bps. And coming forward, we expect to maintain the current levels, not necessarily to increase, but also it doesn't look easy to reduce it. And finally, when you think about administrative expenses, what looks as a 10 bps pressure is in the end a 20 bps dilution. Because as you remember, in the fourth quarter in 14, we under-provisioned variable compensation because we had over-provisioned in the first semester of that very year. So if you appropriate it to the correct quarter, we should have had 2.6 instead of 2.3 in the 4Q14. So not only this is a 20 bps dilution, economically speaking, but also this will be the record quarter. This is the lowest administrative expenses that we ever had in the company. So it shows that we have been able to dilute it. And it's also important to stress that we are investing in our structure as needed for us to grow and for us to deliver our strategy. A good example is category management. We significantly increased the area over the last 2 years. We also restructured our HR area, and we have today a much more costly HR area, but operating much better also than before. So despite of these investments and doing what's right, we have been diluting 20 bps. So this is very promising. And finally, when you look at the EBITDA, 743.5, 37% increase over the previous year, 90 bps margin improvement. In the quarter, it's a 20 bps margin pressure because of the 30 bps pre-operation expenses and because of the 30 bps comp base of the 14, which was artificially inflated by under-provision of compensation. And still, considering this margin loss, the EBITDA increased 18%. It's a very good figure. And here on the right part of the side, I mean, when we calculate the effect of the stores we opened during last year in the total profitability, I mean, they were a significant profitability drag in the short term. So we would have had a margin of 8.3 over 9 billion of gross revenues instead of 7.3 over 9.6 billion. So both on reais and percentage-wise, the initial year of expansion program is a drag, but this drag becomes a huge value, a huge source of value creation going forward. For higher Brazil specifically, EBITDA was 77 million and 8% margin. This is what you should compare to your models. And for bio, we did 6.6 million, 3.5% EBITDA margin. Obviously, there's a huge difference in margin, maybe the margin between higher Brazil and for bio. Part is related to the scale, but part is related to the business model. For bio has much better asset utilization than higher Brazil. So, for example, the capex are almost non-existent, and the working capital is much smaller. A good way to compare the two is look at the EBIT margin, which will be 5.5 versus 3.4, and then the scale comes into play. But still, regardless of the fact that 4Bio brings the margins down, we're not driven by margins, we're driven by returns. And we think we'll have tremendous returns over the longer term. Net income, just the net income, they increased 44%, 70 bps margin increase, and in the quarter, a 10 bp margin increase, corresponding to 25% growth. And here, talking about non-recurring expenses. And here, I want to make myself very clear. We don't like non-recurring expenses. We don't abuse non-recurring expenses. We don't report routinely non-recurring expenses. But when they happen, we have to acknowledge them. And we are, among other things, adjusting an acquisition. I don't know how many acquisitions you do in the past, in the future, maybe none, but maybe some. But the reality is that if you do an acquisition, we adjust the acquisition because it's something we're not serial acquirers. It's something that's not normal in the business model. And then we have here, and that's by far the main factor, the first relevant losses recorded in third-party PBMs over the last 15 years when we started doing business with third-party PBMs. Here what happens, and this is referring to a specific program in which the client is Petrobras. This is not a default by Petrobras. This is a default by a company named Global. This company named Global, they assume underwriting risk for Petrobras. So instead of Petrobras reimbursing them what the employees had spent, Petrobras started paying a certain fee per person per month. As a result, utilization increased a lot, and they got tremendous losses, and they defaulted. So we are negotiating with the PBM because we are here accredited to a third-party PBM that managed the global program. So we are exactly negotiating with the PBM, but I mean it's very clear that we will have material losses here, and so we have provisioned those expected losses. We don't expect for this to repeat. Again, it's the first time in 15 years. And also, as a result of that, we have also adopted a more stringent provisioning criteria, which was also a 1.1 million non-recurring charge. So we don't expect to see recurring expenses in other quarters, but it is what it is. Next page, talk about our cash flows. As I mentioned, this is the third consecutive year with positive free cash flow generation. We generated 110 million in free cash flow versus 76 previous year. 610 million resources from operations, 500 million after deducting working capital investments, and 110 free cash flow. Then the total cash flow was a negative 20 million. But let's take into account here that interest on equity has tripled from 40 million to 120 million. So this was a choice in the end of the game, and this really describes a very good cash generation for the company. Next page, talking about the ROIC, we present this chart every year. We recorded a significant ROIC increase from 15.1 to 19.4. So it is 4.3 percentage points. If we compare to 2011, the year before the merger, we're talking almost 7 percentage point increase. So this is very material. And let's remember that one-third of the stores are still maturing. So if we have our full portfolio of stores matured, our ROI would be something about 30% today. So the high marginal returns we have always been talking about in our expansion, now they're starting to materialize in our consolidated ROI as well. Something to take into account is that as we accelerate, the ROI will probably be maintained flat or even suffer some slight pressure on this year and maybe the next. But then, as the results come, we should be on the uptrend again. So, to conclude before passing to Marcelo for his considerations, we generated last year a total shareholder return of 41.4%, considering share price increase and considering interest on capital distributed. Those investors who bought shares at the Drogasil IPO have had a cumulative total shareholder return of 25% since 2007, so this is a very long period. And those who invested at a high IPO have had 28% since the end of 2010, another very strong value creation pace for the company. We recorded $68 million in trading volume. As you know, we joined the IBOVESPA and the IBRX 50, the two main indices in the Brazilian Stock Exchange this year. So it was a very, very good year for us in every aspect. And now I'll pass to Marcelo for his considerations, and then we'll be back for Q&A. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, let's go to page 18. What's important here? This is my point to discuss with you. What was good for us in 2015? Okay, I think I have two good points to stress here. The number one is the accelerated organic growth. You open 156 stores, but not only stores. We open the stores in the best corners possible in the city. We still stood every part of the process to understand when you have to open a store, you have to be the best store as possible for this community, for this city, or for this state. This is very, very good for us. It helped us to increase the returns in all the stores, and this helped us in this amazing result in 2015. We have it by now 200 contracts signed in 2015. Then you are looking to reach the same good results in new stores for 2016, 2017 also. We also changed the guidance for 165 stores in 2016 and 195 stores in 2016. The other point that helped us a lot with the results, 2015 results, is execution. In all our operational metrics, we did better this year. If you look, for example, the net promoter score, we reached our record level in November. We looked for the stockouts, the employee turnover, the inventory losses. We reached the best number in all this history for both companies. Then if you have retail business is very, very important if you operate it stable with no problems, with no big changes. We did this with very, very in every day and stood the process we doing one day better the other one in the process in all the operation metrics, okay? Another thing is that we're working much better than in the past with the category management. We started the city results with the Hambi partnership. We have started to understand better all the customer behavior, and this will help us in the gross margin 2015. Maybe you help us in the future margin also. The other point that we increase a lot in the operation science is the human research operation, okay? We changed the bar. We are much better in how to take care about our 26,000 employees. We know very well the people, we train well the people, and we start to reduce our turnover month after month. This is good for us because we have the people better in the store to serve our customers. I think these two points help us to increase the margin. We reached 7.9% in margin EBITDA. When I just started the company in 2013, my first goal is 7% in 2 years. I think I reached more. Right now we are 7.9. The ROIC increased in 15.1 to 19.4. The shareholder return is 41%. And we are in IBOVESPA right now, which is very good for us. What expect for 2016? Now, that's the next page, okay? we keep focusing our strategic plan that we started in the beginning of 2014. We have four pillars in this plan, and we are keeping the team to looking for these four pillars. We know that you focus on what's good for the company, we can reach good results in the future. What are these four pillars? Accelerate organic growth. We have a guarantee for to increase the goals in an opening, then you can open more stores in the future also. We have to develop a new format. We are very, very strong in the AV customers. We are very, very strong in the stores with 150 square meters. We need to find ways to build small stores or bigger stores also. We need to find ways to reach the CD customers, not only with PharmaZil, but maybe with DrogaZil and some markets. We need to understand this is good for our future. We need to improve the category management and the shop experience. We know the environment in store is very important. We have the ladies with us right now. Sell for ladies is important because we keep the customer more time inside the stores, and you can sell more items for these customers. We know how the beauty market in Brazil is different from the beauty market in the other parts. We have door-to-door markets very strong in Brazil, and if you have a very, very good opportunity, you can increase the beauty market for us. And you need to engage, analyze, and potentialize the customers. With the CRM, we know this is a journey, not only looking for the CRM, but also in a multi-channel approach with the customer. If you look at the multi-channel approach, we just launched today the new Raia.com in the internet, how to serve the customer by internet. We have drogazil.com new site and Raia.com new site. Then, our number one opportunity for 2016 is to focus on your pillars, strategic pillars, okay? The second focus of us is to take care of the money. We know have money in the bank is a tremendous competitive advantage right now. These advantages help us to buy better with the vendors and maybe be more aggressive in new markets that we enter or going to grow. Then take care of the money is important in an environment like today in Brazil, and we know this is important for our future also. And the third point that's important is to work with the productivity. We know how difficult it is to work with inflation in this country right now. We have all day, every day we have received a message that you have to increase the price, you have to increase the labor cost, you have to increase the energy. Then you have to find ways to be more productivity. For two days, we have to understand better how the people work, the labor in the store, and how you can develop and increase all our IT platforms to serve better our customers. With all this together, maybe can help us to be more productive, not only in 2016, but also in 2017, 2018. But my last message here is that your main strategy is a long-term strategy. You know that you have a golden clock in front of you, us, not right now, but maybe in 10, 15 years right now, and you have been ready to be there. Then we will believe the best part of this business will be the future. Thank you very much. You can go to the question and answer right now.
Thank you. The floor is now open for questions. Our first questions come from Mr. Guilherme Assis from Brasil Plural.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. I'd like to, I know, like, I have a follow-up from the Portuguese conference call, and actually you mentioned, you talked a little bit about competition, right? And you said you see a favorable competitive environment in Brazil. I'd like to know specifically about some of the players. Like, we saw recently a transaction with Pague Menos, which is a competitor that operates more in the low-income segment, so they don't compete directly to you. But they had a deal with General Atlantic where they're putting money in the company. I'd like to get your views on this specific competitor, if you think that you see increasing risks of pent-up competition in the northeast of Brazil, which is their home region, and also about on offering CVS. Like, I know that they have been revising their growth plans for Brazil and even discussing the deal that they made in the past. Have you seen any moves from their side? And how do you see the appetite of CVS to keep on investing and growing in Brazil? So that's one question. And I'll ask the second question now too, which is about the loyalty program, because you also mentioned in your remarks and also in your comments in the press release that you are reviewing or revising the loyalty program. What kind of actions and improvements are you making on that program? Those are the questions. Thank you.
Okay, Guilherme, thanks for the questions. Firstly, I mean, this current environment helps a lot in terms of competition. As one of our board members mentioned the other day in a meeting, Brazil is divided in companies with and without that. I mean, just to give an example, when we bought 4Bio, the latest interest rate, the latest debt they had got, they were paying 23% interest rates. So, I mean, maybe this is a very small company, there was leverage, but still, I mean, when you look around, the marginal cost of debt these days in Brazil is 19, 20, 21, so the spread is much bigger than it was before. And those players who have debt and who still don't have this level of interest, once they roll their lines, once they renew their lines, they'll get this kind of interest. And it's a huge pressure for a company that's probably already generating negative free cash flows to service interest in this level. So what these companies do is they cut people in the stores, they cut inventories, they increase prices, they do a bunch of things that are not sustainable, they let the consumer down, and guess what? The consumer comes to us because we are there with prices, with inventory, with a nice store, better locations, and all the rest that you know. So this has been a benign environment because of that. I mean, Pague Menos did a good transaction with G&A. We respect Pague Menos as a competitor. They have been a longer-term competitor. They have had a focused strategy. They do things different from what we do. But without any doubt, that this was a good transaction for them. I cannot say anything different from them. In terms of CVS and Onofre, I mean, we have a huge respect for CVS as a player in the U.S. I mean, it's an amazing player, it's an amazing company, amazing people, but the reality is that this is not a global business. This is a local business, and you are what you are on the ground. So the way we see, we don't compete with CVS. We compete with Onofre stores, Onofre execution, Onofre management, and we haven't seen much happening. I mean, they have 40 stores. We have in Brazil more than 1,200 stores. They have something like 0.5 billion in revenues. We have 9.5 billion in revenues. So the reality is that, I mean, Onofre is just one player, and we haven't seen much. But even if they start growing, maybe they make money on their own, but I don't think this will be disruptive for the market.
And Guilherme, if you look at the competition, we're looking for the entire countries, okay? Like, local competition is tough. It's very difficult to compete with people in another place. We know that we are the consolidator of the market, one of the consolidators of the market, but we know to compete against the regional guys is very difficult for us. You're doing this well, but it's not easy games. It's not easy. Have another people's good business also in the market also.
This is an industry that we have seen many, many new entrants since 2000. I mean, it started with Fasa from Chile buying a company in the south of Brazil. They got bankrupt. Casa Saba got Drogas Mil. They did very poorly with negative EBITDAs. Profarma bought it. They didn't do much with that. We have Brazil Pharma, and we have many others. The reality is that this is a market that on the outside looks very nice, all these secular trends, but the reality is that this market demands very challenging execution. And there are a small number of companies in the market who are really doing well. We don't claim to be the only one, but there are not that many. I mean, we can count them in a small number of fingers of one hand. So I think this is a very challenging market for all new entrants.
Loyalty program?
Then your second question, loyalty program. I mean, as part of the Dunhambi project, I mean, we re-examined our loyalty programs, we looked at the data, and we decided that we should relaunch the programs and strengthen the programs. We are not getting, I'm not getting into details, because obviously when we launch, then you all see. This is a very sensitive kind of information, but I mean, we want to do better with our loyalty program. The way we see historically, our loyalty program has been great for us to capture data and to give the data back to the consumer in terms of benefits like exclusive offers, but we don't think our loyalty program today is a driver for the consumer to decide where he's buying. And we want to, for the loyalty program to fulfill that role.
And we are looking at this in 2016, 2017, okay? We have prepared all the platforms to try to relaunch all the programs.
There will be pilots?
Yes, in Drogaville and also in Haya.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Different programs for different brands as well.
All right. That's helpful. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mr. Joseph Giordano from J.P. Morgan.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. Actually, I have a couple ones. So the first one is how to cope with the inflationary pressures that we've been seeing in the Brazilian market. So what are the main like initiatives that you mentioned to control better expenses and also to kind of reduce your pre-operating expenses given that you're accelerating your expansion plans? And second, you have like a huge automation project of a distribution center around São Paulo. So I'd like to understand what are the expected gains. Should we expect like a leaner headcount after it's fully deployed? And that's it. Thank you.
Okay, Joe, thank you. So in terms of inflationary pressures, we are at the toughest possible moment on that because we have growing inflation. So when the price increase happened last year, inflation was 8, our price increase was 6, and inflation is now 10. So we are fighting a 4% gap between the cap increases and the actual inflation. Obviously, there have been price adjustments, so the cap is not an absolute limit, as you know, but we have a gap, and that gap is showing up loud and clear in our sales expense. So currently, and I'm talking Q4, Q1, I mean, we're leaving the pressure. We have pressure margin. We have gross margins to offset, to mitigate those pressures. But there is not much we can do or we could do in the fourth quarter, and there's not much we can do in the first quarter. And the pressures will be there, no doubt about it. Having said that, we'll have a second quarter with a very important price increase. We're talking about something like 10% price increase. So for the first time, we'll see our prices or our caps going up in line with inflation. This will be important not only for the inflationary gain on inventories in the second quarter, which certainly will be very big, but this will also lay the foundation for our revenues to be able to further accelerate. Because if the prices come up 10%, then maybe we can do better than 8% mature store growth in the second semester. So we'll be in the second semester, there will be a level playing field for expenses and for prices. So I think this can be very beneficial to us. And in addition to that, we have a lot of emphasis on productivity. There are many projects going on, things involving staffing, things involving salary grid, things involving platforms that should translate in gains. Maybe we can see some of those gains in the second semester. So the second semester, we could see neutral to positive sales expense trend. If the inflation declines, then the opportunity is even bigger. So when you look and think about the year, we certainly will have pressure in the first quarter. we will have a huge second quarter, and then we'll have to see where the revenues will be in the second semester. But I think we'll see a positive second semester. So the question is, if we can pay in the Q2, 3, and 4 what we lose in the Q1 or not, or even if it's bigger, so there could be some margin expansion for the year. Right now, our stance is we think about a neutral margin in the year. But depending on where our revenue gets after the price increase, maybe we could do some margin expansion. We'll see how it plays out. But I think just like it's very tough right now, I think it will be great going forward. Then to your second question, in terms of the automation in São Paulo. Let me share how we thought about that. I mean, we have 3 DCs in São Paulo, and we're growing many stores every year, especially in São Paulo, which is our main market. So obviously, we have some spare demand, but not much spare demand. As the number of stores grow, capacity has to grow. And capacity growth can be either a new DC or existing DC expansion. Since we already have 3 DCs in São Paulo, we don't think it makes any sense to add a new DC. Because a new DC would cost extra working capital, extra rentals, extra administrative expenses, and so on. So we did a ROI calculation in this investment, and the conclusion we got is that what maximized value for the company was adding capacity in existing DCs. And adding capacity in existing DCs through automation is more expensive than opening a new DC. But also, we operate in a much more effective way in that DC because we operate with less labor expenses, meaningfully less labor expenses, and a big capacity increase for the company. So I don't have a magic number to throw out, but this is what maximizes value for the company without any shadow of doubt.
And if you look at the DC, all the strategy in logistics try to help with the expansion, okay? We are every time you are ahead with the expansion. We need to see all these investments right now. No, we need these investments for the future. We are doing think about the future in Brazil, in São Paulo area, how we can grow São Paulo without any problem in all the cities.
195 stores, which is what we open next year, is the relevant scale of a big DC. So if we add stores at that level, it means every year we have to add that kind of capacity. Sometimes it will be a new DC, like this year in the Northeast, and then it makes sense to have a DC there, because you don't have a DC there. The distances are big. The roads are awful. So what maximizes value there was exactly that. In other situations, it may be expanding the size of the existing DC. In other situations, we may be adding automation to an existing DC. So, but logistics investments, it's an ongoing thing. It's not a one-time initiative. Sorry.
One extra question, if I may, regarding the procurement terms, I'd like to understand how sustainable they are, given that like those have been driving a significant improvement to cash cycles in the company. So I'd like to understand, like, if you think that all those opportunistic purchases one day will become like a real term for the company, or it's just like one time. Thank you.
The thing is, I mean, opportunistic buys, they generally consist of the stuff in the channel. So you have a supplier who has a sales target, who's not making them. He needs to show good numbers for the headquarters. I mean, this is how multinationals work, right? And then, I mean, they come to us and they ask us to take extra inventories, and we do that happily by taking extra margins and by getting the working capital investment subsidized, and generally more than subsidized. So, I mean, reverting that trend is not easy. I mean, this is like drugs. Once someone gets in, it's difficult to get out, because for a company to get back to normal, this means that all the channel stuff we did last year, they're losing demand this year. So it's a very difficult cycle to get away from that. Sometimes, okay, they try to progressively do it over many years, but it's not easy to get out of the trap they created themselves. I don't think we have much of a vulnerability on the margin side, but I acknowledge we may have some on the working capital side. I think if the trend reverses, I mean, this could cost us working capital, but I don't think it will cost us margin. I think the margin effect we can mitigate, if there's some, we can mitigate in other ways. I don't think it's that material.
Is it like any specific market segment? So HPC, the market has been declining, or it's on the drug segment? I would believe that on the branded drug side, it's harder. So if it's like a generics or an OTC player being more aggressive, can you comment on that?
Sorry, on the supplier, can you repeat that? I didn't understand the question, sorry.
The ones that are being more aggressive in terms of terms. Like
Terms, I would say it's generally front store, OTC and HPC. But sometimes even drug manufacturers can do it.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
It appears to be no further questions. I'll turn the conference back to the company for their final remarks.
Okay, thank you all for attending our call. And I think in order to look ahead, it's important to understand where we come from. We did the merger in 2011. 2012 and 2013 were challenging years of integration and some margin difficulty. 2014, the integration was concluded, and this was when the vision that drove the consolidation really materialized. So 2014 and 15 were years with a huge leap in execution, which were followed by a huge leap in profitability as well. Since the integration has been concluded, we have been challenging the own execution that we inherited. So we are looking at our processes, our platforms, what we can do better, and we are questioning the status quo, and we are really on a journey to reinvent our execution. And this has been an ongoing thing, and there's a lot of productivity enhancement initiatives in here. 2016 and 2017 are years of acceleration. I mean, we're ramping up towards 195 next year. 165 looks like the most probable number right now, but in the end, we're ramping up towards 195. At any point, if we think we can do more, we will adjust the guidance. If not, that's the guidance we have. But 195 next year, it's a big number, and already the 156 we did last year and the 165 now are relevant numbers. But there are numbers that bring together growth pains. They bring together expense pressures, and these expense pressures, they're here to stay. Give or take 10 bips here or there, but we'll see pressure, pre-operation expenses going forward. It's the cost of growth. In the first quarter, I mean, I think we'll see a similar trend when compared to what we saw in the fourth quarter. We'll see sales expenses challenged by growth pains, inflationary pains, because the price increase still hasn't taken place. And to add to the complexities, we'll be comping against a very challenging comp base of last year. It was our leanest sales expenses we have seen. And we're heavier now than we were back then. So there are pressures waiting for us in the Q1, just as we had pressures on the Q4. But the thing is, when you look at the company structurally, we're very strong in everything. The expansion is doing amazingly well. I mean, both in terms of numbers, but mainly in terms of the quality of the stores, in terms of the initial results we have been getting from those stores. The growth of the mature stores has been very strong. You saw the fourth quarter, and we are seeing a very strong first quarter as well. I mean, obviously, we still have some days, a week or more in February, and a full month in March. But if everything goes on as it has been until now, we'll see another great quarter in terms of revenues. So this is the most important thing, because this is the trend we carry forward. And the gross margins, they're also very good structurally. What will happen is that we have now in the first quarter, a reduction of taxes in generics in São Paulo, which structurally is a good thing. But as far as our margins, it works just like the opposite as the price increases. What happens is that we bought expensive and we sell cheap. So there is some margin pain in the first quarter. I don't think it's huge, but it will be there. So I think we have challenged the first quarter. But then when we get to the second quarter, we'll have a huge inflationary gain on inventories. We're trying to do as big a forward buying as we can to leverage this opportunity. And then we will carry the current sales trends plus the fact that the prices will go up around 10%. So we'll see a second semester in which there will be a level playing field for revenues and expenses for the first time in a very long term. So we believe we'll expand margins. It will certainly expand margins in the second quarter, and we believe we'll expand margins in the second semester. I don't know if all in all this will be a neutral or a positive margin year, but I'm very confident that the momentum we'll carry for next year, meaning where we'll be at the end of the second semester, I think it should be good. So we're also laying the foundation for further margin expansion ahead in 17, 18, and 19. Then to finalize, I'll just to go over some of our IR highlights on page 20. The first thing is that we are preparing the launch of ADR Level 1. So our board has already approved it. We're getting the necessary authorizations from the SEC, from CVM. We believe this will give us greater visibility in the capital markets, and especially this can potentially bring a new pool of investors to the table. The timing for implementation should be March to April. I don't think ADR Level 1 is a transformational thing, but I think it's something welcome that can happen and can help our liquidity and visibility. In 2016, we will release our earnings for the first quarter, April 28th, second quarter, July 28th, third quarter, October 27th. And finally, we have three investor conferences already scheduled. So we have the Bank of America Merrill Lynch Conference, March 16 and 17 in São Paulo. Also in São Paulo, the Bradesco Investment Forum on April 5 and 6. And then on May 18 and 19, we have the Itaú CEO Conference in New York, and Martino and myself will be there. So that's all. I'd like to thank you for attending the call. I'd like to thank for the support of our core shareholders. We are very privileged to have a group of very meaningful shareholders that have been around some since Drogazil IPO, others since High IPO. So we appreciate your trust, the people who have been through the tough and the good times, and I hope to see way more good times than tough times ahead. Thank you very much.
Thank you. High Drogazil's conference call is finished. Have a nice day.